Hi, welcome back to the Women's Soccer Podcast. I'm your host, Liam Greco, but you may know me better as LDG. Since the European transfer window has already started off with a big bang in the first few weeks of the window opening, I figured it would only be suitable to talk about some of these moves, and today's episode will be featuring 10 of them that I think are the most interesting moves for fans to watch out for as these players take their new sides on in the 2024 campaign. I wanted to start by just talking about how this episode's going to work. So I chose 10 transfers, not necessarily the biggest ones, but the ones that I think are quite interesting to look at. And don't worry, all of these players are quite prolific. They demanded excessive fees, and all of them are players that are quite frankly household names. So none of them went to any small clubs. So the only transfers you talk about are players going to mostly clubs like Barca, Chelsea, Bayern Munich, Man City, PSG. You can kind of figure out who we're talking about just by, you know, really getting into it. So I wanted to start with the 10 European signings, and then I also added to do a bonus signing when talking about Julia Grosso's move, which she completed today, to the Chicago Red Stars of the National Women's Soccer League. And even though the NWSL window hasn't, like, officially opened yet, signings have been announced, so I'll wait to do that episode, but I just wanted to, you know, give a little bit teaser to that kind of theme and talk about Julia as she did play her season in Europe. So before we go there, though, I would like to start with what I promised you and what you saw in this episode title, and sort of one of the biggest European transfers this summer. It's so far Kika Nazarev to Barcelona. So, of course, Barca has been quite busy in this window already, even though they have been making a lot of moves going in. They've also lost a lot of players going out. And disappointingly for them, a lot of the players that they demanded, they lost, were on free signings, whereas they actually paid significant fees of 500,000 euros plus for two of the free signings that they've completed so far in this window. Maria Ticas, who's the number one reporter for Barcelona, has stated clearly that this is the end of their window in regards to players moving in, and obviously that makes sense. They are already the top side in Europe, the top side in the world at the club level, and adding two star players on the front line will definitely give the boost that's needed, but they did lose a lot as well. Top experienced players at the senior level like Maria Caldente, Lucy Bronze, and Sandra Paños all departed. Caldente switched over to the Barclays Women's Super League to Arsenal. Not a signing I'm going to talk about, unfortunately, today, even though it is a big move, just because of the fact that it was kind of a publicized move going into it, so I didn't really want to talk about it as much because I don't really think it's as interesting as some of these other moves we're going to talk about today because of the fact that this is kind of a move we've all been waiting for to be finalized for a while. Lucy Bronze has still not been signed by any other club yet, but of course she will be. She's heavily linked to Chelsea, which is very interesting to watch. In addition, Sandra Paños has made the move over to Mexico with Club America, which follows that trend that we've kind of been seeing from a lot of different clubs in Mexico going after Spanish players like Jenny Hermoso and such. In addition, young talents from Barça B's team, Julia Bartel and Ariana Arias, even though they were on the B side, have also moved to top clubs in Europe, with Bartel moving to Chelsea and Arias moving to Wolfsburg. We'll talk about those two teams a little bit later, but not with the specific moves, although they will be kind of mentioned. But going on to Kika, I think one thing that's really interesting about her is she's a free agent next summer, so Barcelona could have waited to pull the trigger on her then. Of course, the reality is for a club like Barcelona, even though they are in financial troubles, because they have such a level of pedigree on the men's side, in women's football, the fees that are being paid are significantly lower, and I think that's the kind of reasoning that we saw on the women's side for Mary Earps, for instance, where she didn't get sold by Manchester United to Arsenal, even though it was a world record fee being demanded, due to the fact, quite frankly, that even that fee of euros, I'm such an American, isn't really that exponential when you think about the grand scheme of things. It's not that big of a sum for a club like them, and so I think for a team like Barca, willing to splash the cost on Kika to get her in now, give her an extra year at the team to develop, is going to be really, really important. Obviously, for a player who signed with that big of a price, she's going to be with the first team. And the big question to see is how many minutes she will get with the stacked midfield that Barca has to offer, with players like Bonmati, who have been incredible. Another wild card to look out for this season is Lexia Putellas, who's kind of been in and out. It'll be interesting to see if she continues to play a bigger role or play more of a super sub role as she re-signs with the club this offseason. But obviously, Barca's midfield is one of the most talented places in the world, and so Kika's going to have a lot of trust problems in regards to getting into the team. We talked about her already in this episode, but now it's time to move on to Eva Pajor, the other signing who I guess was a horribly kept secret. A lot of these have been, to be quite frank. And she's someone who I think is going to be really, really important for this team. They've always had such a beautiful side, Barcelona, but without having a true number nine, it's been kind of hard for them. And I think now having someone like Pajor, who has 136 goals in almost 200 appearances for Wolfsburg, that level of talent is not replicated by merely any other women's footballer, quite frankly. And I think for Barcelona, considering the fact that they love to play a possession style of football, it hasn't really been that troubling for them to not have that pure number nine that has that world-class pedigree that's reflected by the rest of the team, because they've been able to compensate for that by playing a 10 in the central forward position like Jenny Hermoso in previous iterations of this Barca team. And it's obviously great to see a player like Pajor get the chance to move over to Barcelona, but it also speaks wonders of what Wolfsburg has been doing, and we'll talk about that a little bit later with a lot of exodus being experienced by that side. However, for Pajor, considering that she's lost four Champions League finals, this move to Barcelona will be a chance for her to really establish herself on that world stage and hopefully get the first trophy of her career. As for someone of Pajor's quality, she's had so much talent on all her teams, but they've nearly gotten the chance of lifting that silverware, but they've unfortunately not gotten to experience it yet at the continental level. However, this is going to be a really big move for her, as she'll get the chance to play along top side. And we're not going to make this a whole completely Barca episode, which is why I actually didn't include the Mariona's signing, because I didn't want to talk more about Barca. But I'm going to talk a little bit about Ellie Roebuck, because I think this is a really interesting move to talk about. We know that Roebuck was kind of, I guess, exiled from the Manchester City team in regards to getting minutes on the pitch, with players like Ciara Keating being preferred along with Sandy McIver. But it's interesting for me, considering that Roebuck obviously was going to get a move away because of minutes. That's not the question in doubt here. The thing that's confusing to me is why she would leave a side like Man City, who hasn't even qualified for the Champions League ever, to go to a Barcelona side that is the Champions League victors. And the fact that she expects to be competing for the number one goalkeeper, and don't get me wrong, Roebuck is an incredible talent, but it begs the question of why Manchester City couldn't have given her more time. Because if she could start for the best team in the world, then how couldn't she start for the Manchester City women's side? And as a Manchester City fan, on the men's side of the game, I will say the women's side has been lacking in general with investment, which is kind of a big problem with the club. And that's been a big issue I've had with supporting Man City, and I've kind of withdrew a lot of my attention from them due to that fact. But even with players like Shaw and Kelly and Hemp going in there, they're really building something. And it's surprising to me that Roebuck wasn't a part of their plans. And it makes sense when that happens. A player needs to get minutes. She's kind of not had the chance she deserves with England, considering her quality, with players like Hannah Hampton replacing her. And so overall, this move is best for both parties, as Roebuck will try to continue to establish herself in the Lioness jersey. And she will provide someone to compete with Catacola for the number one keeper spot after Sandra Paños leaves the side. We are not done talking about Barcelona, but since Eva Pajor was a star player who left the Wolfsburg side, we might as well talk about another player who left Wolfsburg, and that is Lena Overdov. And we'll dive in a little bit to why Wolfsburg are struggling so much. I'll first start with that, just because I think as women's football is growing, it's becoming clear that the financial divide between clubs is also expanding due to the fact that teams with less predominantly historic male teams have a smaller financial budget. As investment across the globe continues to grow, and for women's football, the teams with smaller budgets will ultimately struggle to continue growing, and that's not something that is that surprising. It's just inevitable due to that fact. So a lot of players left Wolfsburg this summer, three of whom we're talking about this episode. I think it's kind of obvious who, because they are all players who have had such a storied careers. But I think it's a good thing for Wolfsburg that they can get these fees back for players. Oberdorf is a one and only talent, so I think for a team like Bayern Munich, who are trying to expand their aspirations for women's football, it's like a very important move for them, because they need to start bringing in the talent and showing that investment in order to command the results. And considering that Wolfsburg have fallen off a little bit, I think it was so smart of them to continue to push for players. And what a better way than to strengthen your own team by also weakening your biggest rival. And the reality is, women's football is to get automatic qualification, you have to win the league in a top league. It's not like men's football at all. So obviously weakening your competition is so important for a player like Oberdov, who is so comfortable on the ball and in build-up. It'll really allow wing players like Clara Buhl and such to kind of have the ability to be more free-flowing and get in pocket space more. I think what we've seen a lot is the struggle of building out of the back and that connection between lines for Bayern Munich this summer, and for Oberdov to be that player who can connect the lines, it's honestly like the perfect solution. It's not just someone who you're just settling for or signing to fix that problem. He's not here to fix that problem, but she's also going to be one of the best players on your team immediately, as she's one of the top talents in the world. So for someone like Oberdov to be able to join that side, it's really, really impressive. Moving on to another player who left Wolfsburg this summer, it's Dominik Janssen. Janssen's a player who leaves on a free transfer to Manchester United, which I think is also interesting in a lot of ways, and I want to talk about these two clubs because they're both struggling. Wolfsburg, in general, obviously have brought in some younger talents like Ariana Arias from Barca B on a free signing, along with splashing cast for players like Keaton from Brand, Pap from Hungary, and Linder from Hoffenheim, a German rival. And in addition, they brought in experienced Dutch forward Lineth Bernstein. But as one Dutch player comes in, one Dutch player comes out, and that's Dominik Janssen. And obviously, the situation here at Wolfsburg is getting a little bit bigger when we're seeing these exodus of so much talent. But for a player like Janssen to make this move over to Manchester United, it's quite interesting considering that we know that players usually leave a side that is struggling to get to a more professional setup. And the narrative around Manchester United in the media, I'm surprised with that narrative. I'm surprised that any players would even consider signing there. And reports have even stated such drastic comments as agents saying, I would never let my player even begin negotiations there, considering the fact of how Manchester United, for those who don't know, are moving their women's team out of the beautifully built training facility they built for specifically the women's team a year ago, and they bragged all about it, talking about how they were pioneers in the game. Now that the men's training facility is suddenly being renovated, the women just get kicked out into portable pods. If I'm a player and you are an excellent world-class talent, you don't want to be in an environment that doesn't treat women's football seriously. And we've seen in the past with clubs like Reading doing such drastic measures just because they can't financially stay afloat, even though they can. They just don't want to clarify. With even disbanding in their professionality and moving down to the fifth tier. And this tells me so much about women's football, and I'm not suggesting that this will happen to Manchester United, but considering the large exodus, talk about Wolfsburg, Manchester United are experiencing the same exact thing. And for a player like Janssen, it's a really big deal for Manchester United to be able to bring her in, considering the fact that obviously Zellum is leaving the side, who's been their captain, a leader, and as a defensive midfielder. And Janssen has played that role for the majority of the end of the year. So for her to be able to come in, it's really beneficial because she'll be a much bigger presence than Zellum, more physical, so she should easily be able to adapt to the speed of play that'll increase in the Super League from where she played in Germany. So I think that's really a positive move for United, considering the fact that this window is honestly looking like a mess for them with so much talent leaving. It's obviously important for a side to look to replace it, and just in general for the fan base to show an investment in the side by looking to replace that talent. And for them, they haven't even really brought in much talent, so it'll be interesting to see how they continue progressing as the window moves on. Elizabeth Turland is someone who's linked with the side, but overall there's not really a lot of activity going on at Manchester United, and that really speaks volumes to how when a women's side is not treated professionally off the field, it affects the standards on the field and the level of player that would be interesting in making a move to that club. We just talked about a club in the Women's Super League that has really struggled this offseason from a PR point of view, but these are three clubs in the Women's Super League who have shown consistent investment, and they've balled out with these last few signings. I want to start first with the Olivia Smith signing to Liverpool, which I think is one that's quite interesting. She obviously missed the Olympic roster, which Bev Briesman credited to her lack of her international experience in caps, her obviously ongoing negotiations with a move, and additionally the fact that she hasn't had a lot of experience. This wasn't said, but in third, this last point, in a top tier league. And I think we've seen in the past how Briesman has prioritized being in a top league regardless of form of players like Mimi Aludu and Chloe Lacoste being exiled from the side, even though they were in sublime form in the Portuguese league. And Smith was unfortunately in that same exact boat, and after missing a roster, it was inevitable that she would want to make a move over to the British league. I'm a little bit disappointed that the National Women's Soccer League team didn't pick up Smith. We know that there's been a big run, so to speak, of players from Europe that are Canadian, playing their club football in Europe that are representing the Canadian national team, to clarify, who are coming to the United States. We saw Jesse Fleming make that move this offseason. Obviously, Julia Garosa did that this summer, which we'll talk about a little bit later. That was announced today as I'm recording this. And there's so much, obviously, great stuff that has been happening with NWSL and developing international talent. But for someone like Smith, I think for her, she wanted to be in a place where she could get guaranteed minutes, number one, and be recognized at an international level. Playing for a club like Liverpool is a great fit for her because it's a top mid-table team that can compete in games but won't be too high level of a club for her to not get the minutes she deserves. And I think when you look at the NWSL, a lot of the time, because there's such immense parity, it's quite hard for young players to break into squads because there aren't really any teams that are designated for young talents. Every team is full of amazing quality, which prevents sides from being able to rotate in young players, because it's not like Chelsea, with all due respect, playing a side like Bristol City, because there's no really equivalent to that in America. And I think for a young player, it makes sense why she would want to make this move. She's in a situation, an environment where she can develop under Matt Beard, who's done a good job with other young players. It's a very exciting time for this team with other young forwards like Mia Enderby moving into the side. Shanice van de Sanden obviously has left Liverpool along with Emma Quivisto, so it's a little bit of a youth turnover, but I'm really here for it, and I'm excited to see these young players continue to ball out in Liverpool and for the Reds. Moving across to London, I want to talk about Sandy Baltimore moving to Chelsea. This is a move that's really interesting for me because I know that Chelsea's going to look a lot different under Emma Hayes than what we've seen in the past. We know that Emma had her kind of sense of leadership, but also her style of coaching and like the way that we know she'd want to play. I think for this side, the thing that is most interesting and thing to watch out for me is the fact that so many veteran sides or players are leaving the side, rather. People like Fran Kirby left for Brighton and Melanie Leipoldt to Real Madrid. In addition, other talents have also left the team, like Anne Katchenberger, who went to Gotham, Mary Mielda, and obviously they all knew that Berger and all these other leaders were leaving as they're close, but also their leader in Hayes is leaving. I think that speaks volumes to how much of a presence that Emma had. But now with Sonia Bonpastor coming into the team, we know there's going to be more of a French look. And obviously her first move that she brought into the club was Bartel, who's a very, very young, talented, creative player who obviously won't have, in my opinion, first team impact right away, but she will be in the side. I think she'll be in the 18 on the matchday squad. And for her, it's just about continuing developing. But at the end of the day, Chelsea sees these other teams competing. They see their competitors continuing to grow, and depth is necessary with players in the front line leaving like Kirby. It's amazing to get a player like Baltimore to come in. The 24-year-old signs a 4-year contract. She says, and I quote, "I always wanted to play for Chelsea, and that this move feels incredible." Considering that this French manager is going to have this impact, I think it's really going to be interesting to see how this front line plays. And with a player like Baltimore, it'll be interesting to see how she fits in with Girl Wrighton, because of the fact that Wrighton is also another left-footed forward on the wing who plays a very similar role to Baltimore. I wouldn't be surprised to see Wrighton move into a more of a 10 position with players like Leipoldt leaving the side. And it'll be really interesting to see, though, how Chelsea will balance all this talent, because they don't have the problem of having a lackluster squad. It's more of how they can enable all these different talents to get the representation up top that they need. And I think for Baltimore, a big deal for her is getting to play consistent Champions League football, being on like a title competing team in the club level, which PSG wasn't. They were obviously up there often in the standings, but Lyon is kind of the one horse pony. I don't know if that's the right expression, but the like side that is kind of like always leading the race. It's never really close in the French league, and that really speaks volumes about the depth of that league, D1 Arkema, in comparison to the Women's Super League. And I think for Baltimore, this move as a young player will obviously not just put her on the map, but give her a new experience, something new for her to try, and overall just a great new opportunity for her to continue bringing her skills abroad and develop them as she continues to look forward to not just her club football at Chelsea, but internationally with the French team, as she'll be a key instrumental piece in the new generation France is trying to implement currently.
Moving on to our last British signing before we hop over to France, it's Manchester City, let's go, getting Vivian Miedema. I can't even speak to how big of a signing this is, not just for the club as a on-the-field brand, but speaking to their ambition off the pitch. We know that Man City in the past has had the tendency to be a top team. When you look back to the beginning days of the Barclays Women's Super League, they were one of the first teams to found a professional club that was an established men's team, and they obviously asserted dominance early on because of that fact. However, recently, in the last few years before the season, they've really struggled to put an impact on the pitch that has enabled them to win titles consistently. However, this year, even though they didn't win any titles, they had an instrumental piece up front, like Khadija Money Shaw, who was finally clicking with the rest of the team. She had played great and individually in previous years. The team just hadn't done as successfully, to clarify. But for the team this year, it's really interesting to see how partnerships across the front line of Kelly, Hemp, and Shaw were forming. And with a player like Miedema coming in, I think she'll be more willing to be a deep-lying 10, which is the position we saw her maintain more for Arsenal after her ACL injury. We know before the injury how clinical she was in front of that, and that's the ability we will presume, of course, will become more natural to Miedema as she continues working her way back from this injury. However, for her playmaking ability to be more showcased, she'll need to play in a more deep-lying role in a Manchester City side that loves to play more of a wing style of football, with players like Kelly and Hemp having such prominence on the side and obviously being wingers. For a player like being able to succeed on Manchester City, she'll need to play a deeper role, and she can combine with defensive midfielders like Yui Hasegawa in order to create beautiful build-up passes out wide, and also spring Bunny Sean behind. Overall, this front four, so to speak, will be immensely fun to watch, will make me want to watch the Barclays Women's Super League more, and overall, provide more competition for back top back lines of teams on Chelsea's and Arsenal, and kind of add this third competitor to the league that can compete consistently. Obviously, doing well one season is great, but Man City has to continue proving their dominance and their place in British women's football for me to say that they deserve to be at the top. And I think a sign like Miedema really speaks volumes that they had the intention of doing so. Before we move on stateside to the promised segment on Julia Grosso's move to Red Stars, I want to talk a little bit about the French League and for the very interesting signings. I guess it's two. I'm going to do two today. Not three, two. I have two on my planner. And these are swaps, which I think is so interesting. We see this all the time, and I've seen a lot of people talk about how funny and weird, quirky, I guess, that this transition between teams is so natural, considering that Lyon and PSG are rivals. I mean, usually teams don't like to deal with rivals. Miedema only went to Man City on a free. Arsenal probably would have never transferred her there. So I think it's really interesting to see how these players continue to switch back and forth, even though these were threes to preface. I'm not going to try and manipulate these moves for my argument. This is an ongoing and underlying trend that we're seeing, and even players like Eva Gallanto, who's a player who's recently been called into the U.S. camp under Emma Hayes, is now linked from PSG to Lyon. But first of all, we don't talk about rumors in this podcast that often unless they're established. So we talk about moves that have already happened. And let's start with that by talking about Tabitha Chuinga at Olympic Lyonnais. Michelle King has asserted her dominance in women's football from the beginning. She first started by buying the Spirit and helping them win their title in the first season she got them. Then she moved on to purchasing sides like London City Lionesses and Olympic Lyonnais. For London City, she has already purchased players like Kosovari Aslani, who we're not talking about today because it's not a top-tier signing, but wanted to give a shout-out for it because she is making moves and making players that are the top players in the world convinced to go to the second division of women's football. And that never really will happen unless you have an owner with a dedication like Michelle Kane. Even Kosovari herself talks about that in the interview. Anyway, back to Lyon. Tabitha Chuinga has been such an instrumental piece to PSG in their recent Champions League runs. Unlike Baltimore, who plays more on the wing, Chuinga offers that pace in the middle of the pitch, but also sublime finishing ability in front of net, whereas Baltimore more focusing on beating players 1v1 in wider spaces and putting balls into the box for her forwards like Tabitha. Tabitha is not just like her sister Temwa, who loves to dribble on the ball
She's more of a creative player off the ball, so to speak. She loves making runs in behind, yes, like Chewinga. The Chewinga we end to be self fans now, and Temwall, I'll just use their first names. I don't like using them too often because it sounds unprofessional, but because they both have the same last name and they're sisters, I should just use it for this segment. So Temwall obviously is more of a player who loves to get the ball deeper on the pitch, and she can kind of beat any defender and then maybe sell for pace. Obviously in Europe, in the top teams, it's harder to do that. And so for a player like Chewinga, even though she has that pace, and she used it obviously against the match at Olympic Lyonnais in the Champions League to score that beautiful outside of the foot finish that all fans raved about, but it's not just her classy finishing ability or her pace in behind that makes Chewinga so special. It's her ability to interchange with fellow forwards and honestly just make a whole team click. On a lot of teams like the Osimhen's national team, for instance, a forward is usually a player who's like there to finish in the back of the net, and that's kind of it. And they get the most recognition, even though they do kind of the least amount of work. Chewinga is a player who, the Leon Chewinga, Tabitha Chewinga, sorry, I want to clarify that so I don't get too confusing. But Tabitha is a player who really does so much more than that and fails to get the credit. She's a goal scorer, yes, at heart. She can get the ball in the back of the net, like her sister. But at the end of the day, she's a lot more involved in the passing side of the build-up, whereas Temwa is more of a, like, I'm going to beat you with my speed, which are both, you know, very fair approaches, both respectable in their own manners. And for Chewinga to be able to do this, Tabitha Chewinga, mind you, I think it really will add another element to Leon's attack and add a forward who's more, I guess, dimensional. She's a multi-dimensional player, and previous forwards of Leon's side, like Hegerberg, like Sommer, are top quality, world-class players, the best in the world. However, these forwards don't have the same ability that Chewinga has to kind of be part of the interchange and the build-up, and they have that pace to get into behind. As both of them are aging now, it'll be instrumental for Leon to move on to this new generation and invest in young talent, which Kang is certainly showing that she's capable and willing to do. Chewinga is a player, again, Tabitha, sorry, I know it's like really ruining my flow, but I have to clarify. Tabitha Chewinga is a player who will not only be a starter for this team, but be a building block of how Leon will like to play in the future. We know that they're obviously going to have a new coach with Joe Montemurro after Sonia Bonpastor has left for Chelsea, so it'll be interesting to see how Montemurro integrates his new style of football into the club. Danielle van de Donk is one of the players who's played with him under Arsenal, or rather, played with him as a coach, as he was a coach at Arsenal when she was there. And with him coming to Lyon, it was incredible from a Lyon perspective to hear all the amazing things she had to say about him. However, there have been some remarks about his quality of coaching in the past, so it's been a little bit of a mixed bag from Montemurro. He seems like a nice guy, but not the most tactical-oriented coach, so it'll be interesting to see how he utilizes such a dynamic weapon like Chewinga. And hopefully for Lyon fans, we can see Chewinga using that same form and those same abilities that we saw this year that really helped her break out as a star for PSG. Okay, sorry, I'll stop talking about Europe, but I do have to get through one player. So I'm going to talk about Mbok. Mbok is a player who has so much experience at the French national team level side with hundreds of caps for the team, but she's often been overshadowed by Wendy Renard, who's been her club and country mate for a lot of her career. Renard is obviously an incredible forward with an incredible defender with the ability of going forward and winning balls in the air, both in her own box and the other team's 18. But Mbok is just as talented, though she's definitely dipped a little bit in minutes and quality of play of players like Vanessa Gilles getting preferred under the system that Bonpastor played. Mbok is still not a player that should be kind of dismissed and lightened her effort, I guess not taking this seriously is the better way of putting it. Mbok is a talent who is not just good in playing out of the back, you know, that's a quality that a lot of European center backs have, but she's a player who's not afraid of getting into a tackle and winning a challenge. And that's something that I think a lot of players can do, but not all of them can do consistently. And I think that level of consistency and leadership in the back line will be instrumental for a very young PSG team, which sports players like Elise, I'm going to try to pronounce her last name, sorry, Eva Gayento, and Corbin Albert. There's so much young talent on this team, but the reality is that without leadership, a side can really struggle. And the back line truly looked like they were a little bit flustered at points in the season, especially against top quality sides like when they played Lyon. Overall, this furthermore demonstrates how a player like Mbok can be so important. Even if she's not playing 90 minutes like she used to when she was in her prime at Lyon, just her mere leadership ability can make such a big difference for a side that is so willing on kind of bringing in this new talent, but they'll need to have leadership to walk them through it, and Mbonk is the player to do that. Usually in episodes like this, I mean, the headline does say 10 European transfers. I would be giving you an out right now, but I did want to mention one more signing that isn't technically a European transfer because she's leaving Europe to go to America, but we have such a top quality player moving, we have to talk about it now, and I don't want to wait till the next episode about the NWSL comes out, to be honest, because it's almost another month till the transfer window opens, and as an NWSL fan, not my favorite thing, to be honest. I want the moves to happen now. So, the moves that have happened now, which have been big, like Courtney Vine, etc., we can talk about them. I want to first start with Grosso, and that's going to be the only one I unfortunately get into in this episode, but on Instagram at the Women's Soccer Podcast, who underscores between each word, I'm going to be giving my reaction to 5 signings over the course of the next 2 weeks. So, yeah, just follow me there and you can hear my other reactions. But on this podcast feed, you're going to get to hear me talk with Julia Grosso. I watched a lot of highlight reels and film on Grosso after she signed because it's like, okay, you know, I obviously have seen her play internationally, but not being an avid watcher of Serie A Femminile, I haven't really gotten to see many clips of Grosso in recent matches. One thing that really amazes me about her is not just her distribution. We can see that for Canada, that her left foot is sublime, but her ability to break lines and play out of pressure with those passes and her dribbling ability. Grosso is a player I think could really thrive in an 8 box-to-box, 8 role, a 10, or even a 6, because she has all the different assets that Chicago will really need. Chicago is such a prolific goal scorer in Mallory Swanson, yet they fail to have the distribution to get the ball to her. With such talented midfielders on the side, like Leilani Nesbitt and Kerry Ricciardo and Shea Groom, I really believe that playing a player like Grosso higher up the pitch can be a really big necessity for them, and almost even playing like maybe a double 10 kind of thing. And that might be hard, but like, maybe having her be like a box-to-box 8 with Groom as a 10, and with Groom having the flexibility to drop back, allowing Grosso to move forward. I don't know. That'll be for Lauren Dorland-Olsen to figure out. But I think for Grosso's ability to get more minutes in front of Priesbin and get a chance to get back onto that national team starting position, we know she obviously is still in the kind of sight of Bev Priesbin as she got called up for the Olympic squad. But for a player like Grosso, with the excellence that she has and the quality she has, and we talk a lot about this with national teams, and it overall speaks to the lack of media coverage of women's football around the world. If you're not in one of the top leagues, it's very hard for coaches, not only fans, trust me, we experience the struggle, but coaches experience the same problems that us ordinary women's soccer fans do. So it's probably really hard for them to watch Grosso play. I know that they have some matches in the past on out of football, but that ended. So it honestly is not the only reason she made this move. Of course, a different challenge may be a thing that she'll be looking for, but considering that the lack of quality in Serie A is unfortunately present in women's football right now, with players like Tabitha Tuinga leaving the league over the last year or so, and so many others that I could just go on and on talking about, it's really unfortunate to see this problem. But also for Grosso, she'll want to play in a more top quality league, and getting that consistent competition will not only benefit her form at the club level, but allow her to be more prepared for the top quality midfield competitions we'll be playing internationally. I will really excited to see how she fits into the system. There's so many different ideas for how she could play. Obviously, she will be needed to help build out of the backs. I mean, the Red Stars have kind of struggled with a little bit this season, giving away some cheap opportunities to their opponents because of failure to do so. And with Gross's ability to dribble out of pressure, play passes out of pressure and break lines, and ultimately create goals from those attributes, I think it should be an incredible signing for the Red Stars, and ultimately a testimony to how new ownership group led by Laura Ricketts have kind of shown this growing investment for women's football in Chicago. Thank you so much for listening to this first of many transfer episodes. Please be sure to follow us wherever you get your podcasts, share us to your friends, follow us on Instagram, I already mentioned it, where we are, but it's as Women's Soccer Podcast _ between each word. I know it's annoying that I'm like continuing repeating this, probably for listeners who have been here for a while. I'm like, yeah, Liam, I already did all this, but it really does help support us. And although this isn't just a passion of mine, it's not like I'm doing it for a living, it really just amazes me to see the community that women's soccer has. And ultimately, it's not like I'm like using this for myself. I just want to make sure that my content can be shared, as I believe that women's soccer has such a way to grow, even though it's done so far. And I think supporting small content creators like myself is really a big asset of that. So I would really, really appreciate it if you could follow me,
both wherever you get your podcast and on Instagram. Also leave a 5-star review if you want to get something in return. If you have like a juicy question to ask that's women's sock related for me, I will answer it on our either an Instagram reel, a story, a episode that we'll do a Q&A episode. So if we get enough responses, it'll be really fun to do. So I just want to ultimately thank you all for your support. We recently released 75 episodes, which is still an amazing achievement, and I wouldn't be able to do this without you. I know it sounds super cliche, but overall it's not like I could have gotten this support and this traction if it wasn't for my constant love and support of fans. And I mean, it really just like makes me so happy every day, genuinely. Like when I see people like come up to me at games and are like, are you LDG? It's like, yeah, I am. It's so cool for me to be like going from this kid who's just a super big fan of women's soccer to now being able to share my love for the sport on this big platform. It really is inspiring for me. I'm not trying to act like I'm like an inspirational figure or anything. I'm barely doing anything in the grand scheme of things. But overall, I'm just so happy to be able to continue on this ride with this community. And don't worry, we're not leaving here anytime soon. We're going to continue posting content. The Olympics, we've continued to post twice a week. So we'll keep that up on our schedule, Mondays and Thursdays, usually later because I want to make sure that our West Coast listeners can listen to it. But overall, it's just really exciting. Thank you so much for supporting us, and be sure to keep on tuning in. So thanks for listening. Thanks for all your support. It means the world. And see you on Thursday. Bye. Love you from LDG.